from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Four cardinals have asked to meet Pope Francis in Rome to discuss their concerns over the papal document Amoris Laetitiae. Rome correspondent Edward Penton reports the background on this and more Vatican news. Then, Register writer Brian O'Neill discusses how blessed we are in the USA with more than 79 men and women on the road to sainthood. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register senior editor. You know, I recently helped compile a very long list of men and women whose causes for canonization are actually in the works. Later in the show, we're going to talk with saint expert Brian O'Neill about those holy men and women. But first, we're joined by Edward Penton. Welcome back, Edward.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Edward, so these four cardinals, including the American Raymond Burke, Cardinal Raymond Burke, these four cardinals have been asking for months for Pope Francis to respond to their questions. They presented these questions in what is called the Dubia, and this is regarding the chapter in Amoris Laetitiae, chapter 8. And so far, there's been no response to their questions in the Dubia, and now they've made another step to seek an answer.
That's right. Yes, I mean, this procedure is an old one that is often used to try and ascertain clarification on points of theology or church teaching, and they're sent usually to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. The four cardinals sent these dubia to the Pope, mm-hmm. These five questions, and they haven't. The Pope has actually asked Cardinal Müller not to respond. He thinks the answers are already there, and he doesn't want sort of black and white answers, which these questions will try to elicit. So he hasn't answered. After 7 months, the cardinals felt, well, we do want these answers, and so they asked the Pope for an audience. That was at the end of April. The letter was delivered, I believe, by Archbishop Genswein, hand-delivered to the Pope, mm-hmm. on May the 6th. But because they haven't heard from him since then, they felt, well, we're going to have to make this public because we need these questions answered, really, because they're primarily concerned about the salvation of souls, and they're very, very concerned about the confusion, they say, which has developed over Amoris Laetitiae, over the interpretations, the wide variety of interpretations among bishops' conferences, and they're especially concerned about the confusion that priests feel about this and how to deal with the divorce and remarried, which is the most crucial or the most contentious part of Amoris Laetitiae.
So as you were saying, these cardinals have posed what they consider at least straightforward questions, and the response they expect is a really straightforward answer, yes or no answers. Let's refresh our listeners, because we've talked about it before, but let's refresh the collective memory of what those questions are.
Yes, well, the first one is on the divorce and remarried, and whether Amoris Laetitiae allows for or opens the door to remarried divorcees living in an objective state of adultery, so they're engaging in marital relations. The Church has always taught that is an adulterous relationship, mm-hmm. and they've not been admitted to the sacraments. That is the main concern of the five. The others concern other aspects of. I don't have the list in front of me, so I can't remember them offhand. But they do concern other aspects of Amoris Laetitiae, which have concerned the cardinals. One I know is the place of conscience and whether conscience should really be used in this case, especially because some bishops' conferences say that it should be left to the primacy of conscience rather than the Church's teaching, for example, whether they're admitted to Holy Communion. So this is of great concern because they say, you know, a lot of Catholics, especially today, don't have a well-formed conscience. Mm-hmm. So if they feel it's right, then they think they're probably allowed to go to Holy Communion. So this is problematic in that sense as well. So what they just want to do is to really see if Amoris Laetitiae is coherent, consistent with previous church teaching, with past papal teachings, or if there is a break, if this has been read as a rupture with the previous teachings of the Church with the Magisterium. And that's simply just what they want to say, want to get from the Pope. Is there a break? Is this different? Or is it not?
Yeah, Edward, Cardinal Mueller, of course, as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, has spoken on a number of occasions, including to you just recently, on his view of all of this and how the Amoris Laetitia, in particular chapter 8, should be interpreted. What is he saying publicly?
Well, he's saying basically that the Amoris Laetitia, as other bishops' conferences have as well, such as Poland, that Amoris Laetitia can be read in continuity with the Church's teaching, and it should be read in that way, and that there is no break, and that everything that Amoris Laetitia says is consistent with the teachings of the past. He also, in the interview he gave us, he said, you know, the Church's teaching on matrimony remains the same. I asked him, is it of great concern to you, Amoris Laetitia, in Chapter 8, and that was simply his answer. The Church's teaching on marriage has not changed. But he did stress that people have to go to receive the sacraments. If they want to receive, go to Holy Communion, there has to be contrition, confession, and reparation. And he made that very clear. So he says, and he also underlined the indissolubility of a valid marriage. And so for him, there is no change, and that's been his position from the beginning, and he's continually repeated it.
So what, Edward, do you think are the next steps? I mean, they've requested this meeting. The meeting the Pope hasn't even responded, as far as we know, to these cardinals. And so what's next?
Well, this is the question. I think the cardinals themselves, obviously they want to continue with this because they are so concerned about the confusion. But I think what they want to do, though, particularly, is just to keep the channels of dialogue open. They don't want to discredit the Holy Father in any way. It's a very respectful letter, and they want to maintain, or rather underline, that respect that they have for him and the Petrine office. But at the same time, they want to give him the chance to respond and give him as much time as possible to respond, because they feel, as I said, that there's a great urgency, but also a great need for him to respond. They don't want to close down the avenues for him to do that.
So there's another topic of interest to our listeners, and you've written on it. It was something that happened last week, I believe, or the week before last, and this was related to the Pontifical Academy for Life and the new members of this academy. We've been following this story very closely. I think it was late last year that it was announced that basically all of the members that were current last year would be disbanded or would no longer be members after the beginning of the year. And then new members were recently appointed. It's caused some controversy, though, and let's talk about that controversy.
Yes, well, this goes back really to the end of last year when Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, who's now the president of the Pontifical Academy, he was appointed last August. But at the end of last year, he essentially told all the members that they were no longer members, which is about 139, I believe, at the time. And he said that they're no longer members and that the Pope would appoint new ones. That happened earlier this month. And what we saw was, I think, just over 100 of those 139 are no longer members. They haven't been reappointed, but about 29 of those have. And of those, controversially, there have been new ones within the new batch of, I think, 50. And there have been at least three, I think, who are not Catholic, and they don't abide by the teachings on life. For example, we have an Anglican on there who, although he supports a lot of the Church's teachings on life issues, he has said that he supports abortion up to 18 weeks. So a lot of people are very concerned that someone such as him is now a member of the Academy for Life, which actually his duty is, the Academy's task is to help the Church come to formulate teachings built obviously on the teachings of the past on life issues, on current issues related to life. So it's not like, I guess, a sort of think tank. It actually does have a certain amount of sort of executive power, if you like, in terms of helping the Church to formulate its teaching. So this is of great concern. But there are other members, too, who are also of concern.
Yeah, Edward, related to this in a lot of ways is the persistent rumor of an investigation or reopening the discussion relating to Humanae Vitae, the vital encyclical from 1968, in which Pope Blessed Paul VI upheld the Church's unchanging teaching on contraception and life. What are you hearing?
Yes. Well, before I go on, Matthew, if I could just say about the Academy for Life, I should say that the argument for having those new members is to open the Church to dialogue more with the world. That is the argument given for that. So just to give both sides of the arguments there. But on the so-called Commission on Humanae Vitae, I understand, although Archbishop Palio was asked about this, it's not actually his area. I think it's the rumor came from the Secretariat of State. But Archbishop Palio denied it. He said there is no commission set up to look at or to deepen the understanding or to modify Humanae Vitae. Sorry, to modify it, not to deepen. He said there are studies going on which are trying to deepen an understanding of it. So although he denied a certain kind of commission, he didn't deny it outright. So there certainly is some sort of work going on behind the scenes in time for the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae next year. So that's a concern to some people because they feel that these studies could be used in some ways to undermine the Church's teaching on contraception, to try and find ways to allow contraceptions in certain cases.
Well, Edward, thanks for reporting on these very important matters. This one on Humanae Vitae is a close one that I know you're watching, and as is the team of editors here. So we look for more reporting on that, and thanks for being with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
To read more about the topics we've been discussing today, go to ncregister.com and look for the stories. One is called Pro-Abortion Theologian Picked as Pontifical Academy for Life Member, and the other is Dubia Cardinals Seek Papal Audience. Coming up next, we'll be talking to Brian O'Neill about new saints in America, that is, men and women on the path to sainthood. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. And we are also joined by one of our writers who's an expert on saints, Brian O'Neill. Brian, great to have you on. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Jeanette. Hi, Doctor.
Good to be with you.
So we've got this great topic, and this is a story that you wrote a couple months ago, but I love the story, so much so that I decided to pick it up and have a little bit more reporting done for our July 4th issue in the Register, the print edition, excuse me. And this is a story about saints in the United States, saints that come from our homeland, that either they were born here or they lived here and worked here. Your story was The Spirit of 79, and it's a story about the number of Americans proposed for sainthood. These are men and women who have causes for canonization. Of course, 79 is the number of saints or causes, I guess, when you wrote the story, right?
That's correct.
What first of all, how do you keep track of all of these? Where's your radar that you tap into knowing about the causes of the saints?
You know, it's just I'm a saints geek, so I keep databases on this sort of stuff, and I just keep kind of a running list because you never know when the register is going to come up and say, Brian, how many saints are out there? So anyway, yeah, so that's exactly the reason for it.
And are there certain saints that you know, from this large crop that really piqued your interest?
You know, I there's a kind of a new one on the radar, Julia Greeley, being proposed by the Archdiocese of Denver. Her body was recently disinterred and is going to be reinterred in the cathedral, the first person in the history of the cathedral to be buried there. And if you're familiar with how the church has treated saints and their remains over the centuries, it's not just that they've kept them in some cemetery. If you really want to show proper veneration for someone, you bring them into a sacred space of worship, whether it be a chapel or a church or a cathedral, etc. And, you know, it goes back to the time when the church would say churches were built over the tombs of martyrs and other saints, for instance, St. Peter's Basilica. And the reason is because they wanted to say Mass over those people's graves, tombs. And so, you know, we have kind of something like that here. I love this story of Father Samuel Mazzucchelli, Venerable Samuel Mazzucchelli, a Dominican priest, founded the Cincinnati Dominicans in Wisconsin, designed the first Wisconsin State House, designed the cathedral in Dubuque, and was a good friend of the first bishop there, Bishop Matthias Loris. And, you know, there's just some, you know, and then, you know, I guess maybe Father Walter Chizik, he's just a huge, huge hero of mine. So, you know, there's as many great stories out there as there are American canonization causes, beatification causes.
That's so true. You know, going back to Julia Greeley, I got to know of her when I lived in Denver, and she's a former slave, and it's amazing that she is going to be the first person interred in the cathedral. There's no other, there's no bishop, there's no other cleric. It's this laywoman who was a former slave, a convert to the faith. It's really amazing. I would have picked of this bunch, Julia Greeley as the one that really piqued my interest. What about you, Matthew? Was there a saint or perhaps future saint, I guess we should say, call this crop, that stuck out in your memory?
Well, yeah, there were a couple. The one that really, for me, is most vivid is Demetrius Golitsyn, who is the Reverend Prince, as he was known, in part because I actually had the privilege of serving on the Theological Commission, or the Historical Commission for the Diocese of Altoona-Johnstown, that on the diocesan side of the initial investigation into his possible sanctity. So to be able to see the process up close really gives you a newfound respect as to the care that the church takes into all of these causes. But the other one, there are a couple. There's Patrick Peyton, there's Cardinal Cook, and there's Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. And all three are especially meaningful to me because somewhere along the line, I had the privilege of meeting all three.
Wow, really?
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, as a little kid growing up in Hawaii, we were sort of the crossroads of the world. And sure enough, Fulton J. Sheen was in my house. So it was an amazing experience, and I remember it to this day. Yeah.
Did he know your parents? Did he know
your mom? Yeah.
Wow.
He did. And so he came for dinner a couple of times.
Well, update us.
I didn't keep anything as a second-class or third-class relic.
So. Shoot, the tablecloth.
Had you only known.
Had I only known, yes.
Right. Well, update us on the status of that one, Matthew.
Well, the cause for Sheen, of course, and Brian, please chime in here because you're even more up-to-date on this than I would be. There's a great legal battle continuing between the Diocese of Peoria and the Archdiocese of New York as to where his ultimate disposition for the remains will be. And I think all of us are hoping and praying that this can be resolved quickly so that the cause can move on. But what are you hearing, Brian?
There's a court date, I believe, I want to say in September, it may be sooner than that, but I was speaking with a woman who used to be on the Sheen Foundation, and she was she was very instrumental in putting together this 1 million masses around the world for in commemoration of the Archbishop's birthday, a 1,000 masses. My apologies, but in any event, a remarkable number, and they reached it and then some. And she was telling me during my interviewing her that, yeah, this is the case. The judge said, go ahead, give the remains to Peoria, and the Archdiocese is seeing if they can't get a second opinion, basically.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. I hope that resolves itself rather quickly. I wanted to make sure that we included in our discussion, I guess, some of the breadth of these different people. I mean, they're more than 80 people, from some as far back as before we were a country, and some very, very recent. So Brian, fill us in on a few more of these saintly souls and where they are in the process. Some actually, I think, have causes that moved forward rather recently.
There are some. So, for instance, Father Stanley Rother is set to be the first American, first male American who was actually born on U.S. soil.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, for instance, St. John Newman, but he was a naturalized citizen. So Father Rother is going to be beatified this fall. Very exciting. And it'll be take place in Oklahoma City. We haven't had a lot of movement. There are some miracles being investigated, mm-hmm, in Rome. One for Henriette de Lille, that venerable Henriette de Lille from New Orleans. There's a miracle being investigated, if memory serves correctly, for venerable Frederick Berrica, Bishop Berrica. They thought they had a miracle for Father Silos, mm, Blessed Francis Xavier Silos, but that turned out not to be the case. However, more the case than causes moving forward, sadly, are the fact that none of these are moving at all. In fact, most are quite moribund, if not defunct. So, for instance, there's a layman who died in 1976, a guy named Paul Murphy from Phoenix, and he was with the Meanless Yesu movement. And so I was informed that while they had kind of picked up steam and were going good there for a while, doing really well, unfortunately that has just kind of fallen off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy who was kind of a 18th century Padre Pio. He didn't have the stigmata, but he could bilocate. He could prophesy. He was just an amazing saint. His cause for sainthood was actually going forward in before Junipero Serra, who was his boss. And I think what happened there was probably the earthquake in San Francisco. He was Father Magin Catala. He was with the Santa Clara mission. And he probably got derailed by the earthquake in the early 20th century in San Francisco. But, it would be wonderful to have his cause resurrected, because he was such an amazing individual and an amazing Christian.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here. One of the reasons why causes are so difficult to keep moving forward is that they do require quite a bit of funding and manpower to make the cause known, to make sure that people are asking favors of these causes. But there are several that we've been following at the Register that are worth noting. We've been hearing that they should be or will be possibly moving forward soon. Matthew, can you, we don't have much time left, but just fill us in on a couple of the ones that we've heard at the Register, and this is included in our July 4th print edition, are about to move forward or there's some movement happening.
Yeah, well, the one that I've been very keen on for some time, of course, is Father Augustus Tolton, that is in underwork and underway with the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think that's one of those causes that I think is underrated, because this is the first African-American priest to serve, and then he died so early. But a couple of others, I'm thinking in particular of the cause of Venerable Nelson Baker, who was an indefatigable Catholic priest and social worker. Another one, of course, is Father Michael J. McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus.
That's right. Yeah, there are plenty to look forward to. There are some that are gaining some steam, and we invite our listeners to look at ncregister.com. Look at the Spirit of 79, which is the story that was written by Brian O'Neill, and there's also a great story coming up soon from Joseph Pronishin, and that is the one that's in the July 4th print edition. It's on Saints in the USA. Thanks for joining us, Brian. We appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's been, the pleasure's all mine. And thank you, Doctor. I appreciate your time.
God bless.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the ncregister.com, the National Catholic Register. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Rich Jesse, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, this is Joan Lewis in Rome. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.